Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It's Austin Walker. It's October 10th, 2016. It's me still in the bunker, but this mic setup is so much better than what it was this time last week. Joining me, as always, Patrick Klepek.
It's almost. Today was nearly a disaster.
Yeah. Well, clocks are weird.
Clocks are weird. In your head, when you've done something at 10 a.m. and then you do it at 8 a.m., let's say it comes as a surprise.
Especially because, like, it's happening at 8 a.m. for you. In my head, that's like you're always an hour back, but now you're an additional 2 hours back. But, like, it's very easy to mix up time zones. Time zones are weird.
I don't like them. I think we should rethink the whole thing.
Well, yeah, we'll go back to just no time zones. You know the history of time zones with trains and stuff?
No.
So, like, time zones partially are about farming, my understanding is, because, like, when the sun hits places, it's different, obviously.
I mean, I know that was definitely about, you know, like, daylight savings time.
Right.
Is rooted in farming, and actually, if I remember correctly, most, like, farmers don't even use it anymore, and so we're all just forced to suffer through this ancient thing that we've just gotten used to.
Right. But the other thing is that trains would arrive in a city and they needed all of those cities to be on the same time. Previous to that, it was just local time. So it was like, oh yeah, it's noon. The sundial says it's noon here. And the sundial in, like, you know, eastern Ohio would say it's noon at a different time than the sundial in western Ohio would. But the trains needed it to be the same. So it was like, oh, guess what? All of Ohio, you're on the same time now. Everyone here, it's noon now. Get rid of the sundial. Get rid of whatever else you're figuring out what time it is. So it's all logistics, man. Like, that stuff is...
I guess that's reasonable. I'll allow it.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
So how you been? You've been on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm out here for a wedding. My wife's brother's wedding. We were both standing in, you know, flying across the country with a six-week-old. Not my idea of fun. But fortunately, our daughter was the least of our problems this weekend. She actually was fantastic. You just pump her full of food and they go to sleep. If anything, we were asking for advice from people. Their thoughts were, well, you're going to be miserable in a year. In a year, when they can talk, when they can walk, that's your real problem. Being on a flight where you just pump them full of enough juice and then they just pass out is actually a very easy thing to deal with. But we actually had a woman who was two seats in front of us. She got up and was like, oh, there was a baby on this flight. It's like, see, that's the response I want. That means we did our job.
Right. It's a surprise. It was a gift.
Yeah.
It was like a gift in retrospect to her. Like, oh, wow, I had a way better flight than I thought I had because it could have been way worse.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's just, you know, when you're involved in a wedding, there's just a lot of things that, you know, you have to do. So between somehow managing a young kid and trying to do all the responsibilities for a wedding, it has been interesting a couple of days. But we've had a good time. We're at the tail end of it. We'll, you know, have a day to kind of hang out in San Francisco and relax before we get back to the grind.
I also had, like, a pretty good weekend. Like, this is the first time that I've been able to take some time off. I still worked for much of the weekend, but I was able to be like, you know what? I'm gonna play some video games this weekend, and that felt good.
Austin, that's still working.
Well, okay. Well, you're really saying that because now I have to comment critically on everything I played.
See, I mean, that's one of the things that when I look back on my life. If yeah. I technically have to consider playing video games working, it creates like this really dark image of how I've spent most of my time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all of a sudden, every moment of your life. Well, especially because like we also exist in this part of the world or this part of like our careers are also just generally built on our takes on pop culture.
Yep.
So like even if I was like, oh, I'm going to watch Luke Cage. Like, I know an article would start forming in my head as soon as I started watching it, or I'd want to talk about it here with you, or I'd want to have, you know, talk about it on Twitter where what I'm doing is building my brand. Like, welcome to the internet where you're constantly working all of the time, no matter what you're doing.
Is Luke Cage good? We have not seen the end of Daredevil Season 2, and we're trying to wonder if we should just skip it.
I have not. I did not start Luke Cage. I haven't had time to start Luke Cage. I had to work by playing video games.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll leave that for the hot takes then.
Exactly. So, but I will talk a little bit about what I've been playing, because last week, obviously, we had Harvey Smith on. If you missed that episode, go back. It was a great episode. I was really thrilled to have Harvey on. We talked Dishonored 2 and horror and a bunch of other stuff. But I also had played PSVR, and I didn't have time to talk about that because we had a special guest, and we don't have a ton of time today, so I do want to like get into my PSVR experience. So PSVR comes out this week. It comes out on Thursday the 13th, and boy, that was a really interesting first experience. Or it wasn't the first experience. My first experience with PSVR was playing Res Infinite back in Seattle during PAX, and that experience was fantastic. I've talked about that again and again, but the experience playing stuff in my house was less, let's say, a little less comfortable.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's been the common theme I've heard from a bunch of folks that I know with the hardware, is that as both aesthetically pleasing and well-designed as the actual headset mm-hmm. is, like, I think Sony has made the best, most comfortable, most cool-looking headset of the three, and they seem to have streamlined a lot of the process of, you know, putting it together. I mean, putting a Vive together and setting up room space mm-hmm. In your apartment or home is a nightmare. Like, it's difficult. It's finicky. When it works, it's beautiful and unlike and better than any of the other VR setups that are out there. But it's an hour adventure, and that's if you're not drilling things into
right.
your wall,
Jesus.
So that you don't have to do things like put your cameras up on bookshelves and other weird things, and hoping you get it at the right angle.
The payoff for all of that is that it works really well, right? Because like,
correct.
So the big thing for people who maybe didn't see, say, the Giant Bomb stream or didn't see me tweeting about it, the big thing that's happening for me in a lot of different PSVR games right now is there's this jitter. And that jitter is it gets in the way in a couple of different ways. Like, first and foremost, it just makes it hard to play some things, because like, I'm trying to reload this gun in PSVR Worlds, which is like the kind of weird minigame collection that includes like a Getaway style, or I think it's actually in the Getaway universe, the extended Getaway universe, the one that Heist takes place in. This gun is not reload. I can't load this clip in because my hand is just jittering all over the place with the move control. But it also has this other effect, which is that, you know, one of the big concerns with VR is this like notion of physical disassociation, that like the body is not where it's supposed to be. This is one of the things that we actually dug into in our documentary a couple of weeks ago. Maybe we'll play a clip of it right here.
New levels of immersion with VR raise new levels of concern for users' physical and psychological conditions. Developers and consumers alike highlight warnings such as undiagnosed heart conditions, asthma, and sensitivity to adrenaline, posing a very real risk. Professor and founder of video games research firm Superdata, Joost van Drienen, offered us his insight for the potential risks as well as positives for VR gaming on our minds and bodies.
People are essentially guided by the impulses from their environment. And so there is this sense of danger attached to it, and sort of opens people up. It sort of opens the pores of your emotional being, saying, what's happening? It's like you know, you become very, very alert, your adrenaline starts pumping. But there is a lot going on in terms of how you feel inside that space. Things like, a dissociative experience where you lose a sense of where you are in space, where your body doesn't feel like it's yours anymore.
The thing that happens is that with all that jittering, the already tenuous relationship you have with your virtual body becomes stretched even thinner. And so something like, this is what was happening with me, especially in the Arkham VR game, the kind of Batman game, was there's a moment where you descend into the Batcave, and the combination of that and the lack of stillness very quickly made me super queasy. It's the only VR thing to have ever made me queasy, or in general, PSVR is the only thing to have ever made me queasy. Job Simulator, it happened with for me. A lot of first-person stuff with first-person controls and the Move controller, like, because it's not perfectly stable or you know, as near stable as the Oculus Rift and the Vive are, like, that shakiness was not good. Like, I had to lay down in front of a fan and drink water, and, like, whew, like, my whole day is rough now. And, like, really bad headache, like, all this weird stuff.
That's bizarre, because I played the Arkham VR, or at least, you know, a segment of it, 83. Clearly that was on, you know, test hardware, test kits, and so, you know, there's always reason to think that stuff changes between what you play 6 months before it's released and when it's released. Had none of those issues. You know, I mean, you know, you certainly notice if you have a chance to use all of the VR headsets that PlayStation VR, while the build quality is great, it has like the lowest resolution. It is, you know, the most pixely of the three headsets. But often once you're already in the world, you don't notice that. You kind of only notice it when you're directly comparing the headsets or have had extensive experience. So I don't consider it to be like a huge detriment to the PSVR, even if it's true. But yeah, I was in the Arkham VR thing for maybe 15-20 minutes and had no issues. And I've played Job Simulator on the Vive. That's certainly had no issues. So that's worrying if you're having that.
That specific one is an example for me. Is like, I've played a lot of that on the Vive. It was fine. I played it on PSVR, not as fine. And again, part of it is usability, where it's just like, I'm trying to reach to pick something up and my hand just jitters off into the distance, which is strange. But also it can be, which is just like a camera tracking thing. And I've tried different light setups. I've, you know, people have, of course, seen that. And the response you get right away is like, you should have more light in the room, or you should have way less light in the room. Like, trust me, I know. And like, you know, listen, you probably don't know. Like, I promise I've tried more light, less light. I've tried different camera distances. And the PSVR isn't super good at telling you what it needs necessarily.
Well, that's the thing for me is, let's say those things are true. Let's say those people are telling you the right thing, and somehow you've thought you've had enough light, but you really don't. It should be built into the hardware to give you a sense of what you're doing wrong. And the Vive, I have more experience with the Vive than the Oculus and sort of setting it up in a personal environment. The Vive is pretty good about giving you response on, hey, you know, this camera is not seeing this camera. Here's what you need to change. Like, this thing isn't synced up. You have a sense of why things aren't working the way they should be.
Right.
And, you know, part of what was supposed to be appealing about the PlayStation VR is that because Sony is a hardware manufacturer like for decades, because they are used to creating consumer-facing equipment as opposed to Oculus, who is just getting started with Facebook, who doesn't make hardware. And while HTC created the Vive, you're working with Valve, who is a company that does not really make hardware until recently. You would think that the PSVR's biggest advantage would be the fact that it was the most user-friendly and the most explanatory of how VR should be set up,
right?
Because in a lot of ways I feel like they're the tip of the spear for trying to get this in front of eyeballs that are a mass audience. And if they have a poor first experience, that is going to be really difficult to get people to come back to.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit worrying if that's what you're having, because you're someone who shouldn't,
right,
you know, like,
right.
Listen, we do this stuff for a living. You shouldn't have trouble setting up a VR headset.
If my job was like setting strategy for a big box electronics retailer, I'd be pushing those like home installation things real hard this year, because you're going to get people's money on this stuff. Like, people are going to be like, man, there's all these, like, even though PSVR is pretty easy to set up, like, it took me about 20 minutes to set it up. There was still like a lot of wires and a lot of running wires in different directions. And the box has this weird thing where so the PSVR has an exterior box that plugs into the PlayStation 4, like as an additional, I don't think it's a processing unit. I forget exactly what it does. Do you remember?
Oh, what the actual, that little box does?
Yeah.
It's
computers.
I knew at some point.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's something that I suspect will not be in the PlayStation VR 2, presuming they get that far.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's some sort of processing unit that is related to getting the signal out.
So that thing has a thing where, like, you have to plug in four or five different cords into that thing, and three of them are on the back, two of them are on the front, but two of them on the back and two of them on the front line up in the same place, and what you have to do is literally, like click, you have to move part of the box. The box slides in the middle. It's really weird. It's hard to even explain. And it felt like I was going to break something so bad. It's fine. It worked. And that's the thing is, like, it does work. When it works, it's great. Like, it is a fairly affordable, like, in terms of a relative price, especially if you already have a PS4. It's fairly affordable, and when it works, it's super good. And the thing that surprised me the most is actually the way I've enjoyed third-person games in the PSVR, which is not a thing I thought. Like, for me, I'd been banging the first-person VR drum for a long time. I'd seen a lot of the stuff that, like, is it Insomniac who's been putting out, like, VR game after VR game, and a lot of them have been third-person?
Yeah, they put out sort of a Lovecraft third-person action game for the Oculus. They put out they just put out a brawler,
right,
that I played at E3 and was you know, it was simple, but it was enjoyable. And part of what I think, you know, what you're saying and what is most natural when you think about VR and what a lot of developers have leaned into is that first-person experience where you are directing the camera wholly through, you know, moving your head around. Whereas what's kind of interesting about third-person is you're still often the camera, but you can really take in the world in a different way when you have an avatar in front of you. And like, I remember there's the, you know, Lucky's Tale was like the platformer, yes, for Oculus, which is, it was just an okay platformer, but it was kind of amazing to, you know, send your character off in one direction. And then I would be peeking around bridges and other things in the world. And it also, what it allows them to do in third person is to put a little more authoritarial control over what you see,
yes,
in a way that they can't do in first person by the nature of how it's set up. So yes, you can still kind of peek around, but they can also fix the camera in ways that drive your attention that I think is sort of underrated given how much of the VR stuff has been directly first person so far.
Totally. I mean, there was a game called Wayward Sky, which is a sort of like a point and click adventure, or not, it's kind of a puzzler. It's a lot of like, like, oh, you're in this giant steampunk, like, floating city ship thing, and you're kind of moving through this space and pulling levers and moving bridges in different directions and, like, navigating around enemies and stuff like that. And it's just gorgeous. It's like a really beautiful, like, I want to say, like, DreamWorks style character designs more than Pixar style, which I don't.
That's slightly disconcerting.
Well,
Austin,
I mean, it's not. I don't mean it as a diss. I mean, like, in other words, I think it's like a very professional level. I think, like, another pass on, like, and it doesn't have the Pixar charm, but, like, very few things do.
I hear you.
But it's still really good. It's really good, and, like, the city has this great scale. And even though you're not always in, you do occasionally go into first person mode to, like, pull a lever or, like, work with, like, a hands-on puzzle instead of, like, the kind of, like, level design puzzles. But it's gorgeous, and it really works. It lets them put the camera in these specific places that let you have, like, really beautiful views, or, like you said, almost, like, allow there to be puzzle design with the view itself, because as you move your head around, the view does move. And so there's, like, oh, there's a hidden collectible behind this weird crate, and if I, like, stand on my tippy toes, I can see it, or if I, like, you know, lean upwards or whatever. Stuff like that's been really good. Thumper, which I think we can talk about on PSVR. Is that?
Well, I mean, I can certainly talk about the PC version, which I feel like,
yes,
allows you to talk about the PlayStation VR version.
Go for it. Talk to me about Thumper, which is dope.
Yeah, Thumper is just, you know, I didn't play it in VR. My understanding is that they're, you know, investigating ways to do VR for the PC version that is coming out, I believe, this week. I think I might have just gotten an email that says it's coming out today.
I think that's true. I think we got an email that said it comes
like
out.
Like, literally right now. It says, yeah, okay, so Thumper is out today. So
good.
So they moved it up a couple of days. But it's one thing I should say is that even though it's getting written up in a lot of places as part of the PlayStation VR lineup, it is a fantastic experience without VR. It is totally competent and enjoyable.
What is it? Tell us what it is.
They describe it, I think, having played it rather accurately, as rhythm violence, which is to say, if you've played Harmonix's Frequency or other rhythm games where you're sort of on a line and you are tapping buttons to a beat, you have a general sense up front of what the sort of main gameplay of Thumper is. You are this silver beetle that is flying across a single line, and you only have a couple of things you can do. You tap the X button, or if you're, you know, on a keyboard, probably a space bar or something, to the beat of the music based on these little icons that appear on the track. You hold left or right in combination with the A button in order to slide into these really hard turns. You will hold the A button to crash through objects and hold forward and A to jump over objects. But it's all very simple, but it all happens, you know, very rhythmically to the music. And what makes Thumper unique is that, you know, when people think back to Frequency or rather just music games in general, I think with the broad exception of the Beatles Rock Band, you don't really think about the visuals. It's often very much focused on the music and what surrounds.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
The music is an aesthetic that is often, I guess, screensavers would often maybe be, or visualizers, you know, like it would be the kind of the aesthetic that those go for. Whereas Thumper takes inspiration from Lovecraftian horror, from like 70s Italian horror cinema, like Suspiria,
yeah,
and creates a very unnerving, disturbing, creepy environment. It's not jump scares. It's more about tension. It's more about keeping you on the edge of your seat, having your hairs on the back of your neck go up while you are playing a music game. And so the visuals, the soundtrack, the feel of everything collides in a way that when they say rhythm violence, what they're trying to convey is sort of an emotion that you feel as you play this game that is intense in a way that you often don't have playing this style of game. And I feel like it's conveyed within, you know, moments of playing it. It is one of those games that I think, you know, you can watch a gameplay video and jack up the headphones and get a sense of it, but it's really the tactile feeling of slamming the Beatle against the wall, of jumping over things. Like, it all works in concert in a way that I'm sure you've played it in VR that is even more ridiculous in that sort of setup.
I feel like I need you to play it in VR. There are moments in that game that totally, I'm sure, work on a 2D screen, but there are things that happen with scale and distance that are really incredible in VR. Even though it's a rhythm game, there are bosses in this game, which is a strange thing, where you have to kind of complete a sequence in a row and then hit this like last hit that will then do damage to the boss. And those come up over, you have to imagine this is like, what if the guitar band or Guitar Hero or Rock Band track like was twisting off into the infinite void where all of your sins were hiding, and like it twists around such that there's a huge hill, and then coming up over that hill in the distance is this just huge monstrous being, and it does that a couple of different ways, and they can do that with like kind of almost like architectural shapes, like impossible architectural shapes, all sorts of stuff, and like it just towers over you in VR, and then you have to also then execute on this in like intense rhythm, this very difficult rhythm sequence. It is a really powerful game. Like it hits to play it. It feels almost like an inverted Hotline Miami in some senses, right? Where like in Hotline Miami, like, oh man, I'm grooving to this rhythm, I am the actor of violence here. Whereas here it's like, I am barely hanging on by the skin of my teeth, barely surviving, and the music wants me to be dead. Like the music has ill wishes for me.
Yeah, the violence is being enacted upon you. It's like, I think in a write-up I have going up on the site, like I related to a jackhammer. It just feels like there is a pulsing intensity and relentlessness to the game that it never stops. Like you have these, I think, 9 different worlds, and then there are sort of interconnected sub-levels. And as you pass in between them, it gives you grades, and you know, you can, you know, rewind to a checkpoint if you want to, you know, sort of ace the game and go for the leaderboard stuff, which is fine and is incorporated, you know, as a replayability tool. But I feel like the game is intense enough without actually worrying about what your score is. But it just, as you go from sub-level to sub-level, it doesn't stop. Yeah. Like, you get the grade, but you then immediately jettison into the next area because it's all interconnected. And so you just get no chance to catch your breath unless you literally hit the pause button, which I found myself doing multiple times playing because I was having beads of sweat going down my face.
Yeah.
And I just needed a moment to gather myself before I went back into the game.
That adds up to my experience, except also I had a headset on. So it was just like, I couldn't even like wipe the sweat off my brow because I had that plastic just right up against it.
It's a game that if you don't play it in VR, you should play it at night,
sure.
Play it on the biggest screen possible, and put on headphones or have a really, really good sound system. But headphones make the experience personal in a way that regular speakers aren't capable of doing, because, again, part of the appeal of the game, part of the intensity of the game is like the personal nature of how the aesthetic, both orally and visually, kind of work together, and headphones are sort of the best way for the game to convey that most effectively.
Totally. So we only have about 10 minutes left, unfortunately, and I still need to talk about Mafia 3, and I'm gonna do that by cherry picking from the bucket, from the question bucket. Normally, I don't like.
Oh,
I don't
good.
Like to
Look
do
at
it.
Combining segments.
I know.
I like it.
We gotta listen when the time is limited. You gotta do stuff. So this comes in from Alex, who asks or who says. Not Alex Navarro, different Alex.
that we know of.
Who knows? I don't know. Mafia 3 and Watch Dogs 2 are right around the corner. And Mafia 3 is out at this point. This obviously came in before Mafia 3 came out. And both will have black protagonists, a bit of a rarity for our industry, seemingly setting them up to have the issue of racial identity as part of their campaign. Or will they? We've seen some lame attempts from big companies this year trying to evoke some kind of message by using a form of racial conflict as a tool, so I think now is the perfect time to reflect on that. Hangar 13, Mafia's developer, has said that discrimination will play a role in police AI, and demos of the game show that strangely, there's a usable voodoo doll item. There sure is. Meanwhile, I see no evidence of a racial throughline in the gameplay or story of Watch Dogs, just that you'll be running around doing cool stuff as a guy who happens to be black. Obviously, the time periods of these games play a major role here. But with that aside, I think that we have an interesting question. Which is the better approach to convey a meaningful message while selling many copies to get that message out and make back the money these big games need to show this risk is worth it for the publishers? The Mafia approach, which weaves race into the backbone of the mechanics and story, but risks making blunders like the quote-unquote mechanical apartheid of Deus Ex or the crumbly Black Lives Matter callouts in The Division's boss fight, or, alternatively, there is what looks like the Watch Dogs approach, which will likely have fewer lows but fewer highs by having what I hope is a cool protagonist who just happens to be black, which I guess passively says something. It's a really good question, Alex, because I think those are two different ways for a developer to tackle, like, if they're interested in having a diverse representation and to address questions of minority representation in general. It's like, hey, do you just want to happen to have a cool character of an underrepresented identity group, or are you digging into that stuff? And I mean, like, my gut check response is like, do both. Like, both of those things are valid, and if you're going to do the first one, like, really knock it out of the park. Like, really put resources into doing it. You can't half-ass any sort of attempt at representation. And that's not just about identity representation. That's about the representation of anything. Like, I think that if Mafia 3 poorly represented their pulp issues, it would also be a bad game. Or, kind of like the revenge story. If it didn't develop the revenge story in an interesting way, that would also be bad. It's just especially bad with identity because it, you know, it's not just, oh yeah, like, you didn't do justice by this long-running genre, you didn't do justice by people and people's lived experiences. And the thing is,
well, and that was what's so frustrating about the original Watch Dogs.
Yes.
Because if it chose to take place in a fictional city, they could have successfully, you know, they would have still been playing into some really awful stereotypes of the African-American experience in parts of urban areas of America. But it's when they chose to set it in Chicago, in which there is a very tangible way for you to know about that lived-in experience and find some way of representing that in the city you've built. And they totally failed to do that. They
right.
They completely missed the mark, and it was made all the more egregious by the fact that they called it Chicago.
Right.
And then they chose to stereotype and actually grossly misrepresent large swaths of the city, and calling it Chicago and not doing the work was really frustrating. If it was, you know, New Jack City or whatever they wanted to call it. Like, it would
if there
have been,
wasn't literally a stand-in for the Cabrini Green housing projects, right?
Like, right, exactly.
Yeah. So, like, the thing so far, obviously now I'm about, I'd probably say 15 or so hours into Mafia 3, maybe more than that. I think they're hitting it. I really do. And I think there are some problems with that game. I think that it is probably bulkier than it needs to be. I think there could probably be half the missions there are, and it would be a better game.
The problem of an open world game.
Yep, seriously. Well, the thing is, the problem is that a lot of those are necessary things to do in order to advance the plot. And the plot bits are all really good so far. Like, I think that the characterization is fantastic. I really think that I think that the character designs are all really good. There is, like, a really cool mix of characters across a racial spectrum and across, I think, across a sexuality spectrum also. There's a character who is like very clearly dealing with issues of sexuality, and she doesn't feel comfortable talking about it yet. And
that's
doesn't
cool.
have the language for it because the language hasn't been popularized yet, which is really interesting.
Right, yeah.
And in terms of the issues of blackness, like, it's, and I'm going to try to write about this week if I can square away a few hours. Like, I really just need to take a day off so I can go write after. I've never played a game that tries to tackle the notion of visibility, the visibility of being black in America. It does this in a bunch of different ways. And again, I really want to tackle this in a written piece because I think it's complicated. But specifically, like, there's, you know how in stealth games, there's a meter on screen that's like, oh, hey, you're being watched right now, or you're about to be seen, the sort of like Far Cry model of, like, it's around the periphery of your character and it fills in.
Yeah.
So it has that. It also has that for police. Not like you're going to get arrested if it fills. It's just, oh, you're being watched right now. Like, heads up. Like, the things that you normally do, the things that other characters do that wouldn't get them in trouble. If another car goes speeding by, the police don't chase after it. But if you have an accident in front of the police while you're being watched, they'll come and arrest you.
That's kind of fucked in a really wild way.
The notion of, like, oh, you turn a corner and the meter appears on screen and you're being watched and you know you're being watched and your whole... For me, while playing, I was like, oh, my body tenses up. In a way that's very similar to when I see real police, which is like, all right, how's this going to go? Like, let's see. Like, what's this? It could be a totally good encounter. I have plenty of great encounters with police, but other times, not so much, right? Like, and so there is this notion of, like, just letting the player know they're being watched is really interesting. There also are whites-only shops all around and restaurants all over the place. And, like, the second you step inside, it's like you're trespassing, and the shop owner will be like, you're not allowed in here, boy. And it's like, well... Okay, you don't understand. I really need to go into your bathroom to get that med kit. I really got to go collect that hot rod magazine that you have in your back room right now. Please leave me. And if you hang out for long enough, they'll just call the cops on you.
What happens when you have an encounter? Is it more than just sort of the GTA style? Like, oh, now it's a shootout and we'll run away.
No, it's a shootout.
So the meter goes down.
A shootout. Of course, like, that's the thing. It is still that game, right? It's still the shootout, and it's still like that sort of that's still the only verb you have in this game. It's like, I can either shoot people or put people on this knife I have. and which isn't great. I would still love more. The thing that I'd say is, like, so it is definitely a game of steps. It's not a game of, like, oh, they revolutionized this. But hearing them talk openly about blackness and about race in general and about identity in general in ways that are actually lifted from real life and not through the filter of dwarves or cyborgs is really refreshing. I'm not dissing those things necessarily. I'm not saying, like, don't ever do that again at all. I think that those are really interesting ways to deal with topics that are on the periphery or that are on the forthcoming issues. I think that they have historically been, not necessarily, I don't want to say, like, acceptable stand-ins for this, but, like, useful for breaching these topics with audiences that are broader, and maybe that speaks to the question askers, to the question that the commenter asked, is like, oh, sometimes we need analogies or we need soft representation in order to reach an even broader audience, but having them specifically deal with this one thing is really great. I don't want to give too much away here because I actually don't know how it wraps up, but there's a B-plot in which a World War II vet, a white World War II vet, kills two black Korean War vets who came to his house to ask for help because their car broke down, which is like a very clear reference to things that have happened historically, like, in recent memory.
Right.
And it quickly becomes his defense. All this plays out over radio interviews and news updates where they're updating the case and like talking about what's happening in the case. And there's interviews with his lawyers. There's interviews with civil rights leaders about this specific case. And his lawyer constructs the defense that because there is this guy, this black dude running around New Bordeaux, killing people all the time, which you're doing, the guy who killed them was afraid for his life. That your specific actions helped create the environment of violence. And of course, there's also given voice to the people in the community who are like, yeah, of course we're running around. Like, do you see what the conditions are right now? Like, we've tried we've tried nonviolent protest. Like, the answer isn't like, it isn't just saying like, hey, don't be violent. It is very much like, hey, this is we've hit a boiling point and there's conversation around that thing. And like having that play across the radio stuff is really cool. It's using the radio as a way to deliver that something more than just comedy bits or the traditional story stuff that you normally get in most games. Like normally, most games that have this sort of open world radio reactive thing, it's just like, oh, you robbed the bank. And so the next time you turn on the radio, you hear there was a bank robbery. For this right. to be a vector for really good storytelling is fantastic and really cool. So I think I'm going to walk away from this. I don't know. We'll see. There's still a lot of this game left. I really like the documentary stuff. I wish I had more time because I want to just keep talking about Mafia 3. But I'll probably check back in on it on Friday.
That sounds good. I think it's fascinating to watch. I think what's particularly interesting about this game and what you mentioned about the sort of police mechanic is, you know, when we talk about sort of diversity and trying to, you know, represent larger groups and larger life experiences, finding ways to do that mechanically is also something that big AAA video games that have tons of money and time yes. and resources are much more uniquely suited to experiment with, that we cannot get through sort of smaller independent productions that have to do it far more through the story.
Yes.
And so it's really cool that, you know, however that pans out, maybe it gets tiresome over the rest of the course of the game, but that the fact that they tried and are looking for ways to represent that mechanically, yeah. which is what games are so good at and unique with, is, I think, a really fascinating step in the right direction.
I mean, there's other stuff that I wish police response literally is different in different neighborhoods. Like, the police, people will call the police, and the response over the phone will be, like, the police dispatcher being like, yeah, there's a report of a guy with a gun. You can go check it out if you feel like it. To like the cops over the radio, and then they don't come in certain neighborhoods because they're poorer or blacker. And that's like, wow, you really did that. Like, you really made it so that if there's a shootout downtown, police response is quick. And if there's a shootout on the periphery where poor black and brown people live, there isn't a response. And that's like, man, okay, you went for it. Like, it's still washing over me. I don't know where I stand yet, but I'm going to let it keep washing over me. I'm going to keep trying to put time into it, and I'll come back on Friday and talk about it. Unfortunately, that means that we're out of time, though, for now. Patrick, I wish we could. I don't know why I got real dour, but it feels like I miss you. I want to talk to you more often.
Well, it's a good thing. We got a Friday podcast. It won't be. Don't worry. Friday. The week seems to vanish very quickly for us lately. So Friday will be here soon enough.
I was going to say, it's going to be a big week for us this week. The biggest week. The biggest week is still to come, but a big one.
Exactly. Exactly. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Thanks, as always, to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. You can find him on Twitter at Bowen Yeah, BoenYeah. The H is important there. Or at Bo-N, Bo-En.info. Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Patrick Klupik, around pretty much everywhere. Too many places. Actually, if I'm being completely honest. And also, I completely forgot the email address that people should send questions to.
Gamingadvice.com. Gamingadvice.com.
With the header questions.
Exactly.
So that we don't destroy Austin's inbox.
Thank you. You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter. And I think I'm gonna set up a fan page on Facebook. Some people who were like, okay, where's your fan page at? And I was like, it's not a thing I have. They're like, oh, you gotta have one. So I guess I'm gonna set up a fan page for Austin Walker on Facebook today.
If you like doing those likes,
yeah, please.
Here's a place for you to like.
And hey, you know what? Like, thanks to the people who've reviewed the show on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, I'd really appreciate it. We're doing really well in the iTunes ratings. I really appreciate that. Same thing, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to us. Like, go and hit the like button. I'd really appreciate it. Like, comment, subscribe, Meme Mondays, etc., etc. Thanks for listening. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, you read all our stuff. Vice.com/gaming. Do that.
Slightly important.
Really important. All right, y'all. Talk to you on Friday. Peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.